Well, hi there. I'm here with Mark Cohen from DevCorp. Hi, Mark.
How are you doing, Justin?
Doing good, and you?
Yeah, very well this morning.
So let's talk for a little bit about your experiences with Ballistics. You've been working with us for a little while now.
Yeah, a year and a half, I believe.
Excellent. And in summary, how's the journey been?
The journey's been interesting. The result has been terrific.
Okay, so let's expand on that over the next little while, but I guess we should wind back to the beginning. How did you hear about us, and why did you want to engage with us in the first instance? We've never discussed this, but I have a hunch you probably don't spend a lot of money on consultants.
No, I have a medical condition that prevents me from dealing with consultants most of the time.
Yeah.
So yes, I have a real visceral aversion to them generally.
Actually, and before we go further, we should probably tell people a little bit about DevCorp, just the basics.
Okay. Basically, we're a distributor of physical security products, everything from a 50-cent key blank to $1 million access control system. And generally, our channel is through locksmiths, hardware stores, and OEMs.
Good, and you have some specialty products.
Yeah, so I guess the reason I decided to do something and particularly with you is we have a couple of really high-end security products, very unique products that we distribute from overseas, and we were kind of we got to a level with them, and we were kind of struggling to get off a plateau that we'd reached. And no matter what resources we threw at it, what sort of advertising and marketing we threw at it, it seemed to be stuck in a particular gear that we couldn't get out of.
Yeah. And can you describe, should we tell people a little bit about Eka's probably the most exciting of them?
Well, EKA is a product from the US that we have a distributorship for, whereby it's a fully electronic locking cylinder. And the uniqueness of it is there's no wiring, and no power source on the cylinder. So that means we can put full access control onto something as remote as a padlock in the middle of the desert
Or a
and
shipping container.
or a shipping container in the sea and still enjoy all the benefits that a traditional access control system would give you with things like order trail, ability to add and delete users, having time windows for particular users to access the lock.
Okay, excellent. So, what was the situation before Ballistics, and why did you engage with us in the first instance? How did you hear about us too?
I think I heard about you through a group that I was part of called the CEO Institute. You came to speak to us a little while back, and I remember that your talk was pretty interesting. But I thought, no, I don't know if we need that. We're pretty all right. And I guess when I was kind of when I got to the point where I thought, look, we need to do something now with this product. Sales had fallen slightly, which we were very surprised at because it really is an amazing product. And I didn't really know where to turn. So I remember the talk you gave us, and I got in touch again, and I thought I'd spin the wheel once you came to present to us, and I'm glad I did.
Okay, and what was the situation? Do you remember what the problems were we were trying to address?
Well, basically, first of all, we had a direct model because before that distribution didn't work for us. We weren't able to really engage with particularly the locksmiths into convincing them to sell the product. And to a certain extent, that's still true. However, we now go exclusively through our distribution channel. through the locksmiths and security integrators. And the difference is, I guess, we've made our peace with the fact that we'll always have to pull large end users through to our dealers, so assist them in prospecting, I guess. To that end, we had quite a number of sales reps that were quite highly paid, and they were pretty good. And they traipsed around the country, and what we'd tend to find is they tend to be good for the first year or two, and then they'd slide. And what we realized it was is they'd be okay at prospecting, but typically they'd go through their Rolodex in the first year or two, and from then on, it was really cold calling. And as we all know, salespeople are prone to do anything except cold call. It seems to be, unless you find a particularly rare beast, they seem to avoid that at all costs. They tend to like the relationship part of selling as opposed to the foot in the door part of selling.
And probably for good reason. It's not exactly pleasant.
No, it's not. I certainly wouldn't do it.
Okay. So we ran a workshop, a 1 or 2 day workshop. We had your business heads. And do you remember what the big takeouts were from the initial solution design workshop?
Look, I guess the biggest thing was the division of labor, and the eventual, well, it took me a month or two to accept it, but the need for that whole process to be managed by a specific person as opposed to just something that kind of ran itself. So the division of labor has been massive for us because I guess it's a lot easier for somebody, although we just, you know, had a riff about how awful cold calling is. If that's your sole job, well, it somehow is a lot more acceptable if you know you're going in and that's all you're doing.
Yeah.
So the cold callers we have, or actually, I think that's probably the wrong term for it, because, you know, as you've prescribed, we've broken up the process further than that, in that we've got researchers, and then we've got, I guess you could call them appointment setters, we call them channel managers, and they're generally quite excited about their job because I guess it's, you know, it's what they were hired for. So, you know, they weren't hired on the pretense of this kind of nebulous thing called sales, and you get to invent whatever sales means to you. So they had a very clearly defined role, and that a lot of them had done that role before. So I guess that's the other thing. We don't really need to push people to make cold calls because that is their job. And, you know, they know they have a KPI.
And because if we're researching to identify, you know, the appropriate individuals and sending them a nice package, it's by the time somebody picks up the phone and calls them, it's not so cold anymore.
That's true as well. That's true. Well, but occasionally we have to get through a list and we haven't sent them anything and they don't know us. And there's a reason we're going through a list either to invite them to a trade show or something. Or something of that nature, and they're quite happy to do that. We never get complaints. I mean, if you're a carpenter, I guess you don't complain about working with wood.
No. So if we dig into the EKA sales process a little bit, what's an average size EKA deal, and what's a typical or what's a nice installation actually look like?
Well, an average size deal is around $70,000. And, you know, they stretch everywhere from, I guess, at the bottom end, well, we excluding proof of concepts, but at the bottom end around $10,000 all the way up to multi-million-dollar installations.
And there are a couple of notable ones that you've done. Can you disclose them?
I've got to be a little bit careful. I mean, I guess one of the public ones is the Sydney Opera House. That's one of our largest installation. Every cylinder there has the EKA product.
Well, that's probably good enough. I think if
Yeah.
everyone watching, even our British and American listeners know what the Opera House is,
Yes.
I hope.
So we have around 5,000 cylinders in that installation.
Excellent. And so if we dig into how the basic process works, I think that my recollection is we have a researcher who hunts down both the organizations and the individuals who we want to be approaching. And then are you sending a physical package?
Yes. Well, in fact, your consultants further refine that research role. We almost have a pre-research and a researcher. So, we've outsourced the list generation to places like the Philippines. So basically, they might trawl the web for lists, and then that is given to the researcher. The researcher then will qualify, and then from that, packs will be sent out and it forwarded to the channel manager, who really, and when I say qualify, sorry, let me get that straight. They're just checking who the right person to speak to is, and maybe the size of the organization. They're not actually making contact with the person.
Yeah.
So that means the channel manager, typically the first time they ring, has the correct person to speak to, and then they can easily further qualify them.
And the channel manager is a phone-based role.
Yes, it is.
So they're calling on the back of a package. Can you comment on the package that goes out?
Well, in Eka's case, what your marketing department came up with for us was quite a neat little packet. You did a brochure for us, which is quite neat, and a key ring with multiple
Neat, it's a
loops
Hollywood
on.
style production.
Yes,
We
it is.
don't often have we don't often unfortunately work with organizations who are prepared to spend what you did on collateral like that.
Well, I guess for us, we put the work in at the research stage to make sure we qualify well. So that when we're sending out a pack, we're not sending it out to somebody inappropriate. We're sending out, whether they're in a buying phase or not, that we don't know when we send it out. But we do know that they buy cylinders and locks.
Okay, and do you have any evidence of the impact of sending out that pack?
Absolutely. Look, all the way through, we watch the metrics, and I guess from down in research, we look at the size of the list, then we look at the once our researchers phoned and got contacts, we look at that size. Obviously, it's like a funnel; it comes down to a point. Then from when the channel coordinator makes the initial phone call, we then measure how many people agree to a webinar. Well, actually, sorry, not a webinar. How would I
A web
describe it?
conference.
A web conference, I guess. And I guess that's another feature of what we did, because our product's so unique. We got a lot of people who were interested in the concept, but really don't have the budget for it or don't have the need, but they're really keen. So we were sending reps out to the middle of the middle of Australia to go and present to a council who didn't have the budget for it. So with the web conferences, we do our initial meeting over the web, and we use very simple. We don't even use video conferencing. We use a very simple product to push slides across and talk to them over the phone, and that works well because it always works.
Yes.
And what we've found then is I guess we've taken it a further step down the funnel, so that when it if when once we qualify a person over a web consult, we can then send somebody with the confidence that there's a greater than 50 chance, 50% chance that they're going to buy. We know they have budget. We know they're in a buying a buying period. So it's just about then selling our product, which makes a big difference. Because previously, when we had a whole lot of salespeople, it was just potluck. They'd have tiny, tiny conversion rates.
So the interesting thing that's happened here is that historically, obviously these are fairly big deals. They're commercial sales, long sales cycles, and historically this has been viewed as a field sales challenge. And historically, your salespeople have been field salespeople, but I haven't
Correct.
heard you reference yet an activity that is actually happening in the field.
Well, as it is now, a lot of the time, the actual manager of the division goes out for the sale because it's so qualified that he's obviously knows the product best, and he's the best people, he's the best person for these people to talk to. So we figure, why not send him out? And we're sending him to reasonable size deals.
So we've
So,
gone from sales being the responsibility of a small team of field-based salespeople to sales being an inside function with the few critical face-to-face activities being performed by essentially a product manager, not by a salesperson at all.
correct. So we've gone from three full-time sales reps to zero sales reps. So we've only got the manager doing. And when they smaller jobs, sometimes we have sold them over the web. The web's been sufficient. And sometimes we bring our dealers in at that stage, because typically there's another process. We don't sell direct anymore. We have to at some stage bring the dealers into the process. So sometimes we bring them earlier into the process, and they finalize the deal.
So from three dedicated salespeople to zero, and what has happened to the volume of sales activity, in other words, the size of the pipeline, and has there been any impact on sales?
Definitely, the size of the pipeline. Our sales, as I've mentioned, had plateaued and then were falling because our guys had run out of Rolodex contacts. And that might be a little bit unfair. I mean, there were guys that were very good as well, who really worked it. But I guess the issue for them is they don't have this whole machine in the background pumping out qualified leads for them. So, I mean, at some stage, we'll have to put on a full-time salesperson, because the deal pipeline's getting bigger and bigger, to the extent that, already my product manager is complaining quite regularly over, the amount of work he has to do. So that's in the future.
So can you
But I
comment
guess
on, I
hard
mean,
one.
obviously, to the extent that you're comfortable, on the increase in the size of the pipeline and on any impact on deal flow,
Well,
sales volumes?
sales volumes increased probably around 20%, which is nice, but we obviously looking for a lot more than that. And we can see in the pipeline, our pipeline's huge. So typically our sales cycles can range anywhere from 6 months to 3 years, with typically an average sale being 18 months, because they are fairly large deals for people to commit to. So
So the more
we,
lucrative ones are probably still in the pipe.
yeah, and our pipeline's bigger than it's ever been. And I know when I look at it's not highly improbable, it's more highly probable.
Well, that's exciting. And now, obviously, you've reduced your field team, but you've added a bunch of internal people. Have costs gone up?
Look, to be honest, I think costs are around the same, because, well, maybe not. Maybe they are less, but I guess I've added recently a sales coordinator, which is a position we never had, but she's kind of across a number of divisions because we've applied this in other areas of our business, not just EKA. We've applied this in a number of other divisions.
And we sort of
So,
zeroed in on EKA because it's a nice one to tell a story with.
absolutely. But it's equally helping in a number of other areas of our business.
Can you, the viewer might be watching thinking, well, I don't know if Mark's business is a $1 million business operated out of a garage or a $1 billion conglomerate. Can you give the viewer some idea of where you sit in the scheme of things?
Sure. We turn over around 30 million Australian dollars. The division I was telling you about is probably a lot smaller. That's around $3 or $4 million a year, but rapidly rising. So that gives you some scope of
Excellent.
what we do. Yep.
And can you talk a little bit about the relationship with Ballistics, what the working relationship has been like? Because I guess how we engage with organizations is a little different from the type of engagement that you're likely to have if you went and dealt with people who provide the various parts, maybe a CRM provider or a design firm or web provider. How does Ballistics differ from assembling the various services from a whole bunch of other providers?
Well, first of all, Rebecca's pretty tough. She's more interested in getting the process right than kind of the niceties of the relationship. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I guess she's called us on things a number of times when we've kind of been a bit ill-disciplined. I guess the For us, in terms of what you provide, it's been stages for us. So the first value you provided, I guess, was philosophy. The second was process design. Then you provided recruitment, which was pretty important because at the end of the day, we'd never had a sales system like this, so we probably wouldn't have recruited well in hindsight, but you recruited for us. And now that the machine, I guess, just works a lot of the time, you're providing us with a lot of marketing support, which is and occasional tuning, which is pretty valuable.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, this has been great, Mark. I'm sure it's very much of interest for a number of executives and business owners who are watching for a number of reasons. So thank you so much. We have enjoyed a whole bunch working with you guys. I think it's very interesting for me to view from a distance our engagements get started and watch the type of relationship that different organizations build with the consultants that we allocate to them. Because you see that different executives put a different amount in and treat us in a different way. And I think you've done a great job of extracting a lot of value and and also putting our team in a position where they really are rooting for Davcorp from the sidelines.
Look, I mean, my philosophy has been whether throughout the process, whether I've agreed with it necessarily or not, I've let it go because I figured, I'm paying for expertise that I don't necessarily have, and even if I sometimes don't agree with stuff, I've tended to let it ride, and in hindsight, most of that is borne out.
What does the future hold? Though maybe the last question should be, what does the future hold where your sales function or sales functions are concerned?
Well, I guess the it's I, with the sort of system, one of the things that I guess one of the unexpected benefits is just in terms of knowing what to do for the future. So for us, it's kind of easy in that you obviously give the rations to the strong. So as something works, we've tended to pile more into it. So our phone room has gone from zero, basically, to now four, will be nine soon across various parts. That's not just Eka, but across
Yeah.
various parts of the company. So,
And it's a pretty exciting dynamic environment up there.
it's great. We've got a great sales coordinator. That's pretty important, I've learned. And it's they feed off each other. They have little competitions. You know, there's occasionally a 400-gram block of Toblerone that they all vie to make the most appointments. There's some cool stuff there.
That's excellent. Well, you've done really well, and I really appreciate you being prepared to share the story with other people. So
No
thank you so
worries.
much, Mark.
Thanks, Justin.
All the best.
Cheers.